Honors, if I may, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the Court, I am Tor Eklund, along with Jay Lieberman and Mark H. Jaffe. The gentleman beside me are pro bono counsel for appellant Matthew Keyes. The central factor in this case that runs through all the issues in this case is the government's confusion of the unauthorized access prohibitions in the Computer Fraud Abuse Act, the CFAA, and the unauthorized damage prohibition. In this case, the government essentially, all the charges are unauthorized damage charges under 18 U.S.C. 1038-5A. It was a conspiracy to commit unauthorized damage. It was a substantive charge count two to actually damage the content management system, the LA Times, resulting in the edit to the LA Times website story about tax cuts. And then third, it was attempt to cause damage to the streaming company's content management system by putting up a mock-up of the front page on the Chicago Tribune and LA Times, referencing completely. So it doesn't matter.
I'm gonna take you off point just a minute. You said something that kind of makes me worry in this case. It seems to me that you attack Mr. Keyes' convictions as they relate to count two and three and to the rest of the sentence, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you do not attack the sentence for count one?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, as I understand it, would the resolution of this appeal affect the period of incarceration at all?
No, because the sentence is already concurrent, Your Honor, but the whole thing.
And the incarceration will remain the same. All will change if we were to accept your argument as to count two is the restitution amount.
So the restitution amount, he would have two less felony counts on his record, and he'd be able to just simply say he was convicted of conspiracy rather than
well, if we were to say they were just so that's if you were to win as both count two and three.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yes. All right, I just wanted to make sure because that's the way I kind of got through it. And then I started thinking to myself, maybe that's not what he intended.
No, Your Honor, counting counts two and three, we're not counting count one.
All right, so everything would remain the same on his amount of time in jail. We would just be determining whether all these felony counts would be on his record.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the restitution.
And the restitution for $250,000, which
I'm glad to have that out of the way now.
I understood, Your Honor. It was quite clear in our answer. But to return to the issue, so essentially what's happened here is the government charged unauthorized damage in its indictment, and it spent most of the time in its case putting on an unauthorized access case.
Well, as I understand it, maybe you can help me again. We're really talking about count two here. Are you on your count three?
I'm on count two and three, Your Honor.
Well, I understand, but three is just to damage and loss, right?
Three is an attempt to cause the damage, and they say it was.
Is that where you're arguing, or are you on the first count?
I'm on both, Your Honor. I'm saying that's the confusion.
Let me go to count two. Let's go to count two. The original indictment, but the date of, if you will, the conduct at one given time period, and the superseding indictment moved the date back to October the 28th of 2010, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Plus, the superseding indictment added the language, after his employment was terminated, he's kept and used for malicious purposes login credentials to the Tribune's company CMS. Those are the only changes, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you're suggesting that your client would not have even known that he would now have attempting to come in front of the court actions that occurred from October 28th to the original December date?
No, Your Honor, that's not what I'm arguing. That might be a relevant point if this was a due process notice issue case, but this is what we're arguing is the Fifth Amendment granted jury clause in his right to solely stand trial for stuff that a grand jury has passed on. A what we're saying here is that the government has effectively amended the indictment by adding an unauthorized access charge, as opposed to
an unauthorized... Are you suggesting the grand jury didn't have these pre, if you will, the pre-October to December acts in front of them?
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record as to what the grand jury had. All I know is that the government argued an unauthorized access case when it charged an unauthorized damage case, and that is not a due process Fifth Amendment notice issue. That is a Fifth Amendment grand jury clause issue that no notice will cure. We had notice of these emails and all of this from the beginning, but that's not the point with the grand jury clause, Your Honor. The grand jury clause clearly states that a defendant has a right, a constitutional right, to be solely charged with what the grand jury indicts on, and neither the government nor the court can take that constitutional and substantial constitutional right away from him. And what happened at this trial, Your Honor, is most of this trial was spent talking about the exfiltration or copying, if you will, of an email database and an email campaign that has nothing to do with a 1035A charge. They're not causally related, Your Honor, and they must have spent about half to three quarters of the trial arguing that point. And going back to your malicious code, Your Honor, the change in the indictment in paragraph 1H that you're referring to say that Mr. Keyes kept the logins for malicious purposes. Okay, the emails that he sent were not logins, right? So even the judge said, I believe in the excerpts of the record on page 18, the damage in this case is all about the damage to the LA Times website, part of the story. Okay, the emails that Mr. Keyes sent are not at all causally related to the damage at issue in this case. And the way you can clearly see that is that if you take out the emails, the quote unquote cancer emails, you remove that conduct completely, or you keep the rest of the conduct that's alleged in the indictment, you still have the latimes.com website edit. But if you remove him allegedly passing the username and password on 1-2-3-4, I believe December 8th or 11th, somewhere in there, to Sharpie, you no longer have the edit. And 1035A requires that there be a causal relation because it's knowing transmission of a code, the resulting conduct of which intentionally causes damage to a protected computer. You cannot maintain plausibly under the law that those emails that Mr. Keyes sent were a transmission of a code that affects the LA Times website. If they were, first of all, the notion of him even editing this website didn't occur to him until he gets into Internet Fez, which I believe is around sometime early December, Your Honor. So the government, when you read the indictment, you could possibly read it that, oh yes, he kept his logins to the CMS, to the Tribune Company, from October 28th, but you can't read it as an indictment that charges unauthorized access to these things. It's just not in the indictment, and he's got a constitutional right to be solely charged by a grand jury and not by the government and not by the court.
I understand that, but my worry, I guess, is this. You admit to me that you don't know what the grand jury found or didn't found and on what facts it found or did not find. You admit to me, then, that you don't know exactly what the grand jury did, and yet the only thing I've got are the two things that I related to you that change the original indictment to the superseding indictment. And therefore, it seems to me that what we're really looking at is, can I say in this date range change and this language, is there enough there to suggest that the superseding indictment was changed, that somehow it was amended constructively?
Your Honor, it's not the language in the indictment. It's the complex set of facts that are presented at trial, and that either happens under this circuit's precedent. The circuit has two standards. It's either a complex set of facts that are presented at trial that effectively amend the indictment, which happened here. You've got a complex set of facts related to unauthorized access, not unauthorized damage, that amended, constructively amended the indictment, or it can be constructively amended through the jury charge. As Judge Sotomayor knows from U.S. v. Simpson's, the Rico. And that's precisely what happened here. This is Skyron v. United States. This is United States v. Shipsys. It doesn't matter. It's what the grand jury knew. It's first of all not in the records, so it's not relevant to this appeal. And we don't know. It's a mystery. It's black box. It's secret proceedings.
You know, I understand all of that. So I'm just trying to figure out how I can effectively understand your argument, which is that somehow evidence was presented at trial and the jury was allowed to consider, that is, amending the, if you will, the indictment without putting it in perspective as to what the changes were in the indictment.
That's easy to answer, Your Honor. The government led with Brandon Mercer, who was Mr. Keyes' boss at Fox 40. They then proceeded to talk about how he actually copied an email address list from the GreenLeaks database, Your Honor. Now, that is not unauthorized damage to computer copying, despite some of the cases in the other districts that say copying email addresses or copying data is damaging to the CFAA. That can't be the law because they've eliminated, as we argue in our papers, material in our reply, they've eliminated half the CFAA because almost every unauthorized access case involves copying. Yet, that's what they spent a lot of time on the copying, and then the email address and the email sent by Mr. Keyes to the Fox 40 groups. Now, that may be cyber-stalking under 18 U.S.C. 2261A. That may be unauthorized access. That a lot of things, but the one thing it is not, Your Honor, is damage to a protected computer, and I would submit to this court that roughly half to three-quarters of the trial consists of testimony on that. That is the constructive amendment. That is where the government is coming in and effectively trying my client for a crime that he's not been charged with. I think that's pretty straight up from the record. I think the only way you have to contort the statute to somehow come to the point that the exfiltration of the list on the GreenLeaks database is somehow 385A damage. You are now stretching the boundaries of the CFAA so far. You're going to eliminate half of it. You're going to clog these courts here with civil litigation. Even civil litigation. It's so untethered to actual congressional intent that I don't think this court should permit it. And if you have no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for
rebuttal. What is damage in your view?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm not quite understanding what you view the difference to be between the access and damage.
Under evidence, tethering aids to damage is defined as any impairment to the integrity or ability of the damage, which traditionally is construed as, say, deleting data, in our opinion, data there's no backups for, or like a DDoS attack, distributed denial of service attack on a website, so you can't get into the data. None of that happened. When he copied the email addresses, they still had it. You know, they didn't delete it, they still had it, so there's no damage there. So what I'm saying is there's no damage in all of the Fox 40 allegations. Yet, you have it with HollyTimes.com, but they became so confused that the court needs to reverse on this account, and I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I may.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Siegel, one of the AUSAs who tried the case. Your Honor, if this is helpful to the court, what I'd like to do first is explain how the email campaign was here at the Gone Lockhouse, etc., were admissible, even if count two were not in the indictment. So we're not here talking about whether the jury should have heard those things. And then I'll proceed to explain why it didn't affect a constructive amendment to have a trial where that evidence was presented and the jury was instructed in the fashion that it was.
In that construct, would you also touch on why it is Mr. Keyes was appropriately charged in the first place? Because I think the defense is sort of begging the question, or the appellant, that the charges were insufficient from the get-go.
Well, I'll go right there then, Your Honor. So in the court's panel opinion in Nelson, right, this court had no problem saying that it is unauthorized access to circumvent technological access barriers. That is what unauthorized access was. There's no broke the technological and conspiracy act. But what the witnesses in this case testified were responsible for the administration of the CMS system said was that he actually made changes to the authentication system of the CMS that would allow total strangers to get in with a new set of credentials. And what John Coffin, Special Agent John Coffin did, what Dylan Kalaza did, was actually identify the command lines and the backdoor access by username. Now, one of them was anon 1234. That's the one that was first passed on with Keyes' kind of colorful characterization of the object of the conspiracy. And another one was test 1234. Test 1234 was a set of backdoor access credentials that was used to download the email list on November 3rd and November 22nd. Now, the government did not argue that that download was itself damaged. The defendant's site, excerpts of record, it's either 153 or 156, to make that argument, where they say that we made that argument. But what the government's point was there, if you look at it, is that he carved all these back doors, and with them, he was doing these malicious things, such as altering people's credentials, downloading the email list, making alterations to the front-facing websites. So that's the distinction between unauthorized access, which anybody can do with a set of passwords, and damage, which is creating whole new credentials on the LM server. And that is what this court already considered in an unauthorized damage case, which is Middleton. And in Middleton, you need to understand Middleton in the context of creative computing, which says that subsequent damage hasn't changed under the statute. So a system, with the testimony in this case, where so many people who were editors of these newspapers, who were IT managers responsible for the management of the system, said an essential feature of our system is the exclusion of outsiders. And that's what broke that damage.
Well, I've got your damage argument, but now let's turn to how come that evidence would have come in, even if it hadn't been in count two.
Okay.
Because to me, that's the big issue here. I've looked at count two. I looked at what you alleged in the indictment. Then I looked at the superseding indictment. I saw what the changes were. And I said to myself, how would the defendant have known what was coming? And then I look at the jury instructions and I say, how do I know what the jury convicted Keyes of in count two? Seems to me there's conduct there which was never alleged in count two, but the jury very easily could have convicted him of without the allegations that are in count two, which I think is their argument for it.
So the defendant wants to frame count two as count two, paragraph two of count two is just the mere statutory language of the damage statute. Right. And what the defendant is trying to say is that because the first paragraph of count two incorporates all of the introductory manner and means and overt acts language of the conspiracy, then count two should be convened to the allegations in count one. But in so doing, gives an overly narrow reading to what these allegations actually are.
Well, but I didn't see anything in count two related to anything except the L.A. Times.
Well, Your Honor,
I just read the original indictment seems to concern only the alteration of the L.A. Times website.
Your Honor, I'm glad you asked that. I just want to clear that up. Excerpts of record 237.
All right.
Is this the third page of the indictment. And the defendant, in its reply briefs, is calling all this conduct the Fox 40 conduct, as if Fox 40's got nothing to do with the indictment. But the object of the conspiracy, charged in paragraph 3, says that the following objects, among others, to make unauthorized authorized changes to websites that Tribune Company used to communicate news features to the public.
Which is the LA Times.
And to damage computer systems used by the Tribune Company.
Again, the LA Times.
I don't think so, Your Honor. It's Nathan Gary's word that connects those two phrases is and moreover, the next paragraph, what it describes the matter and means, says the participants identified Tribune Company, Fox 40, and the Los Angeles Times as targets for online intrusion and web vandalism.
So through the back door on the creation of new administrator status to outsiders.
Yes. And so the defendant can say, this is only about the LA Times, but that is not consistent with the indictment. And if you go down the manner and means, and even the overt acts, the Los Angeles Times conduct is what's charged most specifically. But the question, if you're deciding a constructive amendment claim, is whether there was evidence presented that was outside the allegations. I mean, for example, this court in Dallas, considering a variance claim, says the private said, among others, the defendant was on notice in Dallas that when he was obstructing justice, the indictment alleged that he was telling this witness that it would be bad for you if he testified, but he was convicted on persuasion to tell a different story. And the question about notice that Your Honor asked about is, does the indictment give notice that there's more coming? And unquestionably, this indictment says, among other things, but it also specifically identifies Fox 40 as a target for online intrusion and web vandalism. Now, they can say what they want about how this should have been charged as unauthorized access, query whether we could have made up the other elements of that felony. But for a constructive amendment claim, the real question is, are the allegations encompassed in the indictment? And in the reply brief, they essentially concede that. What they say, what they've moved to in the reply brief, Your Honor, is that these facts were not specifically alleged. That would be a new development in the law of constructive amendment. It's not a civil case where there's a requirement that fraud be pleaded with specificity, for example. That this is notice pleading, and what this indictment told the defendant is, you either got fired or you quit, who knows. You left the company on October 28th. You kept this stable of unauthorized password username combinations. You used it for malicious purposes. You targeted Tribune Company, Fox 40, Los Angeles Times for things that can't really be described only as the Los Angeles Times edit. And then you hooked up with Anonymous and had this conspiracy. And Your Honor, the conspiracy is formed not with, if this is not a conspiracy to deface the Los Angeles Times, right? The words of conspiracy are Keyes's, colorful words that are quoted in the indictment. It's much broader. It's don't mess stuff up. And that's what they were doing.
I read United States versus Cecil. Are you familiar with that case?
Cecil?
Cecil.
Was that something that
means? It's a 1979 case.
I have to confess that.
All right. Then I want to ask you about that.
What I would like to talk about is...
my worry about this is, and I'll look back at it again, but it seemed to me that the original indictment seemed to concern only the alteration of the LA Times website. It seemed to me that when we went to the superseding indictment, all we did is change the date for the range and then add some language. And I guess there's nothing which talks about cancer-man emails, downloading of Fox Rewards member subscriber lists, emails to the Fox Rewards members, the Cohen CMS access problems, which is the evidence presented. And then I look at the jury verdict, and I'm not sure whether we're talking about the LA Times website problem or these first problems, which were never described.
It's all of it.
of stuff in my computer, which I to some extent suggest that you have a first indictment and now you have a superseding indictment. And I guess I'm trying to figure out if, and then I have the jury's verdict as to the jury instructions, and that's why I ask you the questions.
If the jury was instructed in the language of the statute, they're presumed to have followed it. It's the same language of the statute that's alleged in count two, so this is not the first kind of constructive amendment where two statutory theories are presented to the jury. Only one was in the indictment. All of the words in the jury instruction are in the charging paragraph of count two. What's really alleged here is sort of a complex facts kind of constructive amendment, and I think that is defeated by this court's teaching in Doss, where this court says when the indictment says, among others, the defendant is on notice that there could be more coming. And it's even more specific here because the indictment specifically says, Fox 40, and never mind what Your Honor has been told the first indictment concerned, only the Los Angeles Times.
Well, have you told looking at it, reading it?
Well, what's important is what the superseder says, and the superseder also says,
yes, there's only two changes in the superseder, and I've given them to you. And I still have a tough time understanding how those two changes would make a difference in what we've got to deal with. Well, if this isn't sufficiently in the first, you're not going to convince me those two changes are going to do it.
Well, the only thing is, what I would offer, Your Honor, is that there is nothing that happened between October 28th and December 8th except for the thing switching objects. Right? There's nothing in the record at all. Any transmissions of codes, anything, except for the emails at the very beginning of the Smith-Cohen conduct, which overlaps with the beginning of the conspiracy. There is no other evidence that it could have been. So what you're left with was the district court that's given by the defendant the language in the words of the statute. In an indictment that talks about Fox 40, where the defendant complains they charged this in order to expand it and include the Fox 40 conduct, and then gives a jury instruction that they were handed, and the jury convicts them properly of the language of the statute.
And I just ask one further question. If we were to disagree with you, what effect would it have on the judgment? Do you agree with your adversary?
$100. Do you have discussions to send back? I agree that the jury from prison doesn't change. We can talk about the restitution amount, but
the restitution would come down by count two.
No, Your Honor, because my time is up, but if you ask me, I will answer. So
you better answer me, because I'm of the understanding if I reverse use to count two, the restitution would go down by that amount.
So the problem the defendant has is that restitution is calculated in a conspiracy crime by everything that was in the scope of the conspiracy. And again, maybe we disagree about what's in the scope of the conspiracy, but you're going to have to evaluate that. And I urge you to focus on those matter and means paragraphs that talk about Fox 40 as a target for online nutrition.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just real briefly, the government can't escape the fact that it charged an unauthorized damage case, and they basically go off to an unauthorized access case. I'd like to address just very quickly one case that the United States cited for the notion that damage can, under CPA, can be merely possessing usernames and passwords to a system. That's United States v. Middleton, which is a decision by this court. In 2000, the problem with Middleton is that it's now bad law. And the reason for that is that the CFAA's definition of damage and loss were amended, I believe, on August 26, 2001. Previously, the damage and the loss definitions were run together in one section. After Middleton was decided, they were split apart. And I think partially the reason that happened is because of the confusion between damage and loss of subject to the CFA is just related to the data. Moreover, in Middleton, you actually had damage to the system because the defendant in Middleton actually went and deleted things. And the damage issue was not the central issue in Middleton. The issue in Middleton, strangely enough, was that the defendant argued that the CFAA did not apply to corporations. So to the extent that anything in the government's brief or argument relies on Middleton, I submit to this court that Middleton is bad law. And I'm cautious about anything when you're looking at cases regarding the CFAA. It has been amended numerous times. I would also argue that the United States v. Nozzle, this court's decision in its first incarnation, the 2012 decision, known as Nozzle 1, makes a bunch of cases saying that copying information is damaged under the CFAA bad law, because as this court clearly stated in Nozzle, the CFAA is an anti-hacking statute. It's not a misuse of information statute.
Are you saying that damage is... Go ahead. You asked the question.
But are you saying that deletion is the only way that there could be damage in this scenario?
No, Your Honor. There could be impairment to the integrity or the availability of the data, but what impairment means and what integrity means are nowhere defined. Those are difficult questions to answer because, for instance, we argue that if there is a readily available backup of the data, there is no damage. For instance, if you've got five perfectly identical files and someone deletes one of them and I've got four copies left, is that about damage under the CFAA? Is there impairment to the integrity of the data when I've got four exact copies of it? Because you're running into issues here, and this is sort of one of the interesting things to me about this case in the damage context, and why I think this is actually an important case in terms of the definition of damage, because our position is that the government is taking such a broad view of damage, like I've said before, that they're writing out half the statute, and this is also a civil statute. So you're inviting all sorts of civil litigation based on these broad-based definitions of damage, and you're also turning a lot of potentially innocuous conduct into a felony, for instance, like password sharing. You know, this court just held that it was in Facebook's powers and Nozzle 2 that an employer can affirmatively revoke your authorization to do something. So now I've shared a password with somebody, and if it's CFAA damage, the difference between the sentence between a 1038-2C unauthorized access charge and a 1038-5A unauthorized damage charge is one is 5 years, the other one's 10. And it's very easy to argue that the value of the data obtained is over $5,000, which is the felony threshold, which is why you rarely ever see misdemeanor CFAA prosecutions.
Thank you for your argument.
Thank you for the privilege, Your Honor.
Thank you very much for your argument in this very interesting case, 161197, USA versus Keys. We'll now turn to our last case on the calendar, which is 1715993, Henry versus Central Freight Lines.